It is Saturday, December 29th, 2007, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. On today's last Geek Speak episode of 2007, the Week in Geek News, and technology that we think is cool that's coming up this coming year. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today, we're covering some technology that happened in 2007, is going to be really happening in 2008, stuff that's coming up that we think is exciting. We're also taking your calls and questions and comments on technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org to send us email. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Cruise.io, providing local internet services including DSL, computer care, classes, and website builders. Information about Cruise.io memberships available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks. Sean Cleveland, Senior Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA. Morning, Sean.
Good morning, Lyle.
Miles Elam, Geek Student. Geek Student of All, Master of None.
Good morning, Lyle.
Oh, that sounds bad. You got a cold?
Getting over one.
Oh, man. All right.
First time I talked this morning. Yes. I'm here. Yes.
Miles will be dying in the back corner. Ryder Brooks, support engineer at Sun Microsystems.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Drew Meyer, product manager at Network Appliance.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, happy holidays to all. We're going to do some geek news before we get into the technology we think is amazing and cool coming up. And the first news story I'm going to go ahead and go to Drew.
Let's see. The most interesting thing to me right now that I saw was that AOL is ending Netscape. So, remember Netscape, the browser that was kind of the first... one of the early big splashes for open source and was a competitor to Microsoft's Internet Explorer. AOL owned Netscape and decided on Friday to stop development of the browser completely.
I didn't know they were developing it.
I hadn't realized that either. I don't know anybody who uses Netscape any longer. And Netscape has kind of devolved into a skin for Firefox, essentially, because it's a lot of the same code. So they decided to give it up. It was a $4.2 billion acquisition of Netscape Communications in 1999, and it had simplified into a handful of engineers.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Success story. That's, well, it almost lasted 10 years, but not quite.
You know, I remember when AOL bought it, and it was kind of this big rub because most of the web developers loved Netscape and hated AOL. And so it was a strange thing where AOL all of a sudden owned their baby.
It's amazing. At one point, they had 90% of the browser market. And wow. Today, they have less than 1%. AOL has no interest in spending money on the brand.
What do you mean almost 10 years? Because I was...
from 1999 to 2008...
Oh,
that they survived on as an acquisition. They spent $4.2 billion squandered it in less than 10 years, essentially, is one way to look at it.
Ouch.
Remember when Netscape was it? That was the browser.
Yeah. That was the way to go.
Oh, well, thank you for that news story. Kind of sad, the death of Netscape. Of course, I mean, I feel like the Mozilla project is the real, you know, passion behind Netscape anyway, so Firefox and the Mozilla products seem to be kind of an extension of Netscape.
And the Mozilla project is profitable.
It is.
Yes. Has been.
As an open source development group. How do they make money?
One, because when you start up Firefox, it comes up with Google. So Google is infusing some cash and they get cash every time you use the Google search inside of Firefox's search bar.
What if you switch the little drop down thing to choose like Yahoo as your search
engine? Then they wouldn't get that search revenue.
They don't make money from revenue from Yahoo?
I don't know if they do or not.
Interesting.
The lion's share is from Google.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Remember back in those days, you had to put in all your addresses by hand? You had Windows 95, and you had to put in your IP, your DNSs, all that stuff. And if something happened to your OS, you just screamed to the heaven.
That still happens. What are you talking about?
But now we have, you know, DHCP. Things are easier. It's done for you. But God, yeah. Back then, getting internet to work was just not easy.
Do you remember all using AltaVista as your primary search engine?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's a good search engine. All right. Thank you very much, Drew, for that story. I'm going to go down the line to Ryder. Next news story.
Okay. I thought it was interesting, the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration, you know, our favorite people at the airport, they are going to be forbidding certain types of lithium batteries from being taken onto the planes.
Now, they did this before when the Dell laptops were burning. They started restricting all laptops that were Dell laptops. So yeah. Now they're becoming more specific, only some batteries.
Well, they're
batteries.
Going for lithium quantities. Specifically, I guess there's different types of lithium batteries. Lithium ion, they're not as worried about, but ones that are just lithium metal, they're limiting batteries that have 2 grams of lithium in them.
Are they doing this for the purpose that there might be a flaw in the battery and it could cause a problem, or for terrorists?
I think it's for terrorists. I think it's, you know, it's the capacity for it to be
used as a bomb.
Yeah, exactly.
So if I made a pen out of lithium, well, lithium, I guess, is pretty reactive, so that would be kind of problematic. It seems to me that just restricting the battery seems like restricting a good use of lithium, even though they're probably not scanning for lithium, mm-hmm. if you will, and you could just carry it on in a
Well, and interestingly, the restrictions seem to be more restrictive to baggage that you check in under the plane rather than what you carry on with you.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But it seems to be 2 gram threshold for you know, and I'm not even familiar with lithium versus lithium ion batteries. So I don't know if they're targeting obsolete technology or what. Yeah, that's going to go into effect on January 1st.
It seems to me a completely useless thing to do because...
Yeah, it's a security precaution, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, but you know, lithium, you can put lithium in something else. I mean,
You can't... Well, and that begs the question, okay, so how are they detecting it if it's not right. actually in a battery?
Right.
And, you know, is their TSA staff trained to detect, you know, the difference between
batteries? And can you change the label on your battery so it doesn't say lithium, you know? I mean,
yeah. I mean, it seems a little silly, but that's
silly.
The TSA
a lot.
For you.
Thank you so much for that depressing news.
That, that sums it up quite nicely.
Charlie and Don, who do the show right before us, of course, when I came in, Charlie was saying about how horrible traffic was. He has a nephew that traveled and... Airplane, you know, traffic on the airplane, traveling through the airplane is just a horrible experience, and it gets worse every day, it sounds like. All right, thank you so much for that depressing news. And we'll move on to...
Yeah, you know, wait a minute. I was just reading the other day that that more people have access to travel than ever before, and the prices are the lowest that they've ever been.
Okay,
so
that's
despite
true.
All the complaints,
it's still amazing
access
to visit
for the
your
mass
family.
Is an extraordinary deal.
Yeah, at the sacrifice actually, of no
As long
no
as you're traveling
food.
In yeah, the United States.
Yeah, in the United States. You go outside the United States and a lot of the airports are in a lot better condition than the...
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
After being at the Japan Frankfurt Airport, that was horrible. But you know, most the other airports that I was at recently were pretty good. The problem is when you leave the airport in another country, you might as well just take all the money out of your wallet and just throw it away. This stuff is so expensive. It's incredible.
Once you get overseas and you walk out the door of the airport.
Yeah, you're in trouble because it's just not a good time to travel right now.
Then you're stuck with the depreciating dollar. That's a whole other issue.
Yes.
Miles, next news story.
Next news story. Speaking of money going down the drain, I'm sure many people who have ever tried to register a domain name have come across this before.
Oh, I don't know.
Which is... thinking of that perfect domain name or thinking about a possibility for a domain name, searching for that domain name, and then going, well, maybe I'll get it next week. Let me see how this works out. It's a good name, though. In 6 months when I have that, when I have more time, I'll work on that.
Let me see. Then you come back and it's gone.
And it's gone. It's been...
Because you searched on it, somebody bought it, thinking you're going to go back and spend money on it when you really want it.
Exactly.
See, there's always been this rumor of this happening.
Right, and now...
There's a term for it, too. It's not squatting, but there's another term, like pouncing or something like that.
Well, it is poaching. But what it means, though, is that there is a data leak in the Whois infrastructure. And it is happening with a couple of different registrars.
I always assumed it was the registrar itself.
Yeah, me too.
Exactly. But it's happening with all the registrars, so you're wondering about that. And one particular individual who works for the Daily Domainer was wondering about this, looked up a particular domain name and waited, and literally 2 minutes later, that domain name was registered.
Interesting.
And started repeating the experiment with a couple of different registrars, and same thing happened. So he contacted one of them saying, I think you got a leak, or what's going on with this? And they were saying, well, no, we actually just pipe those requests on through to Network Solutions. And that's the common theme, is that it appears that Network Solutions either has some collusion going on or they have a data leak.
So who's a safe place to search for domain names?
Unfortunately, I don't have a safe place.
I've been searching for domain names at gtk.net. I think that's it.
So wait, your real question is, which registrars can you go to that don't use Network Solutions?
Yeah, which one's safe to search for?
I don't know that information. Do you guys?
No.
Well,
it's funny. We always thought that every one of them, you know, were independent of Network Solutions.
Okay, so the one that I use, and I have done a lot of searches and then later got the domain, and it's been a while and it wasn't automatically grabbed. Not saying that it's a definite. It's gkg.net, which I believe is where geekspeak.org is hosted or registered. So gkg.net, I think, is a safe place to search for new domain names. Okay, that's kind of scary, though. I think I want to test it and make sure. Let's search for one. We'll search for
and so wait, this
Miles,
is grabbed by a competitor
Elam,
or grabbed by
someone that will basically try to extort more money out of you.
Okay, so I'm going to search for MilesElamIsCool.com at GKG. And then at the end of the show, it's available, by the way. You could get it for 3 years.
I can't believe it.
Miles Elam is cool. Nobody actually wants that. Strange.
What you should do is actually register a domain that you're not announcing over the air, so you're not.
Oh, you think that maybe our listeners will buy it?
Exactly.
Right now? If you want to buy MilesElamIsCool.com, make sure you send us an email so we know it's you.
But right, no, choose one and don't tell any of us what it is.
I'll do it one more time.
Don't make it is not cool either.
You know, I found a little bit more information on the lithium battery thing I wanted to clarify. The Federal Aviation Administration found that the fire protection systems in the cargo hold of passenger planes, they can't put out the fire sparked by lithium batteries.
So
we're not talking about just lithium ion. We're talking about the little lithium batteries that are like in watches and
now, is that
hearing aids. And
why would you want to tell the entire public world that lithium fires can't be put out in the hold of an airplane?
I thought that was public knowledge, actually, that they're a chemical battery, they're an electrical fire, and
all right.
I think of the other type of fire.
I remember at the trade show in Japan, I think, where the guy's notebook caught on fire. They just had to watch it burn.
Right. You can't throw water on it. It's an electrical fire. You can't just douse it with general chemicals.
I think the problem is that the lithium and whatever substances with it is the oxidation. So it has its own source. You can't. It's like
you have
a
to suffocate it. Basically.
Why can't you?
No,
put,
you can't.
No, you can't.
It needs no fuel. It is its own fuel source. So it's like a firework. You can't
it's
put
like
it
a
out.
Flare, underwater flare, or something.
Yeah. You can't smother it. That makes sense. So it's definitely a safety issue. Well, yeah. I feel a little bit better about it then. So they don't want a whole bunch of lithium that they can't deal with.
But they'd get into a whole big stink if they ever tried to stop anyone from carrying a laptop on.
Right, so they're trying to reduce the density so that it just smolders or something. why don't they just make ejectable cargo holds? So, you know, problem emerges, dump it. It all goes. Mm-hmm. All right.
What if it's in the cabin? You just eject the cabin?
Oh, well, that'd be bad. All right, Sean.
Someone's notebook caught on fire.
Isn't there a finite... There's enough people that can deal with making it safe.
Yeah. Isn't there a finite amount of lithium in the world?
There's a finite amount of everything in the world. Even knowledge. Mr. Cleveland...
Goodness. The big car show comes up next month, the North American International Auto Show, previously known as the Detroit Auto Show, which is the granddaddy, in January, and Toyota has already kind of let a little cat out of the bag. They're actually going to do a hybrid truck. It's called the ABAT, A-BAT. It's a unibody-based pickup. It's about 2 feet shorter than their Tacoma. It looks very weird, especially the bed itself. It's big enough to hold a 4-foot by 8-foot sheet of plywood. I guess that's where, you know, that's kind of the benchmark to determine if a truck is
can it hold it in
usable.
The bed, or is it can it hold it
in the bed? Although I think it's going to stick outside of the bed, but it will stay in the bed.
I know what I want for my birthday.
I'm wondering if it could pull anything though. With, you know, the hybrid synergy drive, like a boat.
It's got a motor and an engine. Why couldn't it?
Yeah, what it could do. But it rides, it looks pretty interesting.
All right.
We'll put a link up to the website, but dailytech.com has the story.
the full review.
So, yeah, on the right, hybrid so Toyota pickup hybrid concept. Pickup.
And when is this trade? When is this car show?
In January. So I don't have the exact date here, but
well, I would say you just covered kind of two birds with one stone. That's cool technology for next year, and good news too. Thank you, Sean.
And Toyota is, you know, they've promised that all of their cars will have a hybrid technology by the year 2020. Or they'll be hybrid equipped.
Right. All right. Thank you very much, Sean.
Yeah.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, Ryder Brooks, and Drew Meyer. We just covered some geek news. We're now going to get into some technology we think is cool for the last year that's going to really hit the big news this coming year. Is that a good way to describe it? Okay. Let's go ahead and start with Mr. Brooks.
Okay.
Can you get your mic a little closer to you?
Yeah.
Thank you.
There we go. Just wait till I cough. Be fun. Popular Science came out with the innovation of the year for 2007, what they believe to be truly innovative, and I happen to agree. It's pretty cool. It's a company called NanoSolar. They have a product called PowerSheet, which is sort of the next generation of solar panels. And the intriguing thing about this is that it's actually, rather than using silicon, it's a printable proprietary ink that self-forms into a semiconductor that you can basically print onto metal foil.
What does a semiconductor do?
Generates electricity.
From light?
From light.
Exactly. From photons.
It's a photovoltaic
So you drop process. Some drop on there, and then it crystallizes into a fully functioning solar cell.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
Yeah. And you can basically do this in regular air. I think current technology production of solar cells requires in a vacuum and putting it onto glass.
Right. And it's really expensive to create.
Very
it's
expensive. This is extremely less expensive. They're predicting about 30 cents a watt.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, is it... Okay, so 30 cents, so just looking at the output, which is mm-hmm. a good way to look at it. Is the are the percentages as good so that you have got a...
You know, I don't have the efficiency rating offhand, but they're basically saying it's 5 to 10 times more... output for the same square space, you know, for the area that it produces.
Very cool.
And the really cool part is it's much easier to install it. Basically, they can print it onto this conductive foil. Let's essentially think of it as like aluminum foil. They roll it up, you know, into a big, you know, bin, you know, and roll it out. You can put it, you know, on top of trucks. You can put it on the top of your house, everywhere.
Do you know if it's kind of disposable? I mean, because normally a big expense is you put the substrate onto glass, and then the glass, of course, you can clean it. But if on another type of structure, can you clean it afterwards? I mean, is it going
to
be...
It's supposed to be incredibly durable. They're predicting a 30-year lifespan on it.
Wow.
And they're testing it in, you know, like places like the Antarctic and Phoenix for polar, you know, temperature extremes.
So when is this going to production?
They've actually already started commercial production of it. They currently have, I think, a 1.4 megawatt power plant in Europe that they're shipping the first 100,000 cells to, but they actually just started producing commercial cells this last week.
Great.
So, and they're based out of Silicon Valley.
What's the name of the company?
NanoSolar. So you can go to nanosolar.com.
Thank you very much. Or geekspeak.org to find out more. We'll have links up in moments, I'm sure. Thank you very much, Ryder. Next cool technology upcoming? Drew?
I think I'm looking forward to the adoption of the Ubuntu operating system in the next year. I've been impressed ever since Miles first mentioned it to me. I'm a ferociously avid user, not a developer because I'm just a regular guy, but I mean, I don't particularly have those skills, but I love to watch it grow and participate in. It seems like adoption is increasing. I don't have any data to support this, but the amount of buzz that I hear, the amount of buzz I see in the press, the fact that Dell is OEMing it now, the fact that Sun is now OEMing it, and recently, about a month ago, they announced that 180,000 students, the entire Republic of Macedonia, is going to be using Ubuntu as their standard desktop.
Wow.
So between that and the One Laptop Per Child initiative, I'm hoping that computing access gets more and more available to people who normally wouldn't be able to afford it.
Yeah. Now, are you running Ubuntu right now?
I am.
You are?
I am.
Is that your personal laptop?
This is my work notebook. I have it dual booting into both Windows and Ubuntu. And remember, folks, I'm not a developer. I'm a marketing guy. It's
right.
Actually possible to do this stuff.
It's a usable operating system.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
Free.
I took a PC that Sean had given me a while back. It's an older one with a kind of an unusual Transmeta processor inside, but it's Intel architecture. And my 80-year-old...
Still running?
It's still running, and it's now running with Ubuntu, and it's been a Christmas present to my 80-year-old neighbor who has never had a computer before, and he's up and running.
Nice.
Nice. Oh, that's old. That's good geek gifting.
Very low
power.
The
power of free software on top of antique hardware. It actually makes stuff work. It keeps it out of the landfill, which I'm a big fan of. It gives access to people who normally wouldn't have it.
It's and not it only completely free, but you can request a CD be shipped to you no charge.
For free. If you don't want to download it over the web or you don't yet have access, you're listening to this in some other place than on the internet.
How are they making revenue?
The foundation, the Canonical Foundation, was founded by a guy who made several zillion dollars in South Africa, Mark Shuttleworth. It's a fascinating story. Go to Ubuntu.com. The development community is all volunteer time, and there are some of the best Linux developers in the world that have been involved with the Debian project for years are now focused on Ubuntu more and more.
It says he set up a .com and sold it to VeriSign at exactly the right time. And then he spent $20 million and went to the space station.
Yeah, I believe he was the founder of Thought.
Thought,
THAWTE, the
certificate
authority. The certificate authority.
So since then, he's dedicated himself to providing access to computing power for people who don't have it in a free method. Now, free as in free, I'm spaced out.
As in public radio.
Free as in free of charge and free as in free speech.
Free like in free speech, not free beer. It's both. You can get it for free without paying anything for it. But all of the software, including all the applications, that things that can complement and replace Office and gives you a new browser, lets everything you do with a Windows machine, it's all there. You don't have to pay a license fee for it. So it's pretty impressive.
And you can see it. How it's created. So it has a framework.
If there are bugs, you can report them. If there are bugs and you're a talented developer, you can fix them and you can send the fixes in. They get adopted by the next release. They have a long-term support cycle, so different than other Linux distributions. Every 6 months, there's a reliably released a new version, so you can always upgrade for free.
Now, the Inquirer just did a story on the top flavors of Linux. They went through them all and they talk about them and they talk about Ubuntu. They say it first appeared in 2004, and already it's claimed more than half the market, according to the Open Source Development Lab's 2007 survey.
Nice. I wouldn't be surprised.
It has more than twice as many users as Debian, and about three times as many as Fedora or SUSE.
It takes a lot of the software from Debian. They have a lot of cross-pollination. Yeah,
it leverages. But the key here is usability. You can take this CD, you can stick it in your drive, and it'll install itself, and you don't have to know what's going on.
Or, for that matter, you can stick a CD in, boot it up, and start running without having to
install anything.
We call that a live CD. So I tried that on this computer, this old, I don't know, I'm still talking about Ubuntu.
That's okay, that's good.
I took this computer that Sean had given me, which I wasn't sure that Ubuntu would run on because of that Transmeta processor. I stuck the live CD, I downloaded it to a CD, burned a CD in Windows, and then I rebooted the machine with that CD in the drive, and it booted into Ubuntu running off the CD-ROM, and I could then tell whether it would run on the hardware and whether everything would work properly or not. The answer was yes. I click a button on the desktop, it installs it right off the CD right onto my machine and wipes over that Windows installation, and I'm off and running. It took me maybe half an hour.
Yeah, that processor is actually x86 compatible.
Exactly.
But it's not really x86. It uses this code morphing technology.
Fancy.
That translates x86 from VLSI.
Well, I can tell you that it works. Ubuntu either thinks it's x86 or has code for Transmeta in there.
No, it's x86.
Okay. Yeah.
For all intents and purposes.
Isn't that company gone now?
No, they're still around. They have like 30 employees.
But there
and
is.
A bunch of IP that, you know, I don't think they're making much money on. But there's always the hope of Transmeta. Oh, you know what kept them around is they sued Intel, and Intel settled. That gave them a huge influx of cash for the next year and a half, I think.
I see.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's my huge long prediction. Ubuntu adoption is going to continue to increase. I think that's probably pretty safe.
So I think that's safe.
You think primarily on the desktop?
I do. There are a lot of server flavors out there and a lot of people with different preferences and tastes for what those server flavors
are. I guess the Ubuntu
are.
Server version is still very basic.
Well, it doesn't have a graphical environment by default. So.
I used to run Ubuntu server on remember that cluster of machines I had in the garage that was running Boink, but because it takes up less RAM than your desktop version, but the desktop version is beautiful and it has all the applications with it, so I think it's going to be more popular.
I end up just using the desktop edition as a server. Yeah, I mean, there's no reason why you can't,
unless you have a thin amount of RAM or something.
Yeah,
it is nice to have that user interface as well. Mm-hmm. All right, well, thank you very much, Drew, for that update on that. We'll continue with some of the more of the geek predictions and technology to watch for in 2008. In just a moment, GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com.
KUSP co-sponsors First Night Monterey 2008, Passport to the Arts, Monday, December 31st. Don't miss the New Year's Eve community celebration for all ages. The streets of historic downtown Monterey are transformed into a festive setting featuring music, food, singing, and dancing. The first act starts at 3 p.m. with a twilight parade at 5:30 p.m. For more information on First Night Monterey's New Year's Eve celebration, please call 373-4778 or go online to firstnightmonterey.org.
And we are now taking your calls with questions and comments of technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We'll take any questions or comments you have today for us. And again, the phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. For notes and links and all that about what we're doing today on the show, you're welcome to visit geekspeak.org. If you'd like to ask us questions through email, you're welcome to use that as well. Stay with us on KUSP for Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
Tune in Monday morning for the New Year's edition of Politics Takes a Holiday. Tune in to find out who wins the Capital Steps Awards in the new categories Sexiest Men's Room Patron, Best Toxic Chemical in an Imported Toy, and that's Politics Takes a Holiday Monday morning at 10 a.m. on KUSP.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. That was Ryder Brooks and Drew Meyer. We also have Sean Cleveland and Miles Elam. We're taking your questions and comments of technology today. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can use the internet. Just go to geekspeak.org to ask us questions through typing. All right, we're going to go ahead and take another cool technology of the year, and since I've been kind of going that way, I guess I'll go with Miles. Hi.
Hi. This has to do with laptops. Now, we've already talked about the One Laptop Per Child project, which I predict will be a lot bigger in 2008.
So then they went into production finally.
Yeah. Right. Uh-huh. Which, incidentally, you can still do the buy one, give one project until December 31st. So you have 2 days to go to the site laptop.org and do that. But I'm seeing more and more news stories about kids trying it out where adults have a really hard time with this laptop, and yet children are taking to it with no manual, no training, no guidance whatsoever, just doing it.
Adults have a hard time with it?
Yes.
Why?
Adults are having a hard time even opening the laptop, apparently.
Why? Is it that difficult?
No, because we have our preconceived notions about how a laptop works and how software is supposed to work and the like. And if you take away those preconceived notions, you're going to end up interacting with the device differently.
So you have to turn off your preconceptions to make it happen.
If you can.
Seems fair to me. I can do that easy.
But it's what I'm looking for in technology is all of these. The technology that exists in the One Laptop Per Child project, I believe, is going to come forward into other laptops as well, including the mesh networking and the like. But I'm also seeing other technologies such as this story, rather amusing, about an LCD panel versus a crossbow.
This is a
monitor, an LCD monitor that's been released already. I don't know if it's actually you can buy it yet. It has a crystal sapphire protective screen. In that, you know how with LCD screens you're afraid of touching it, you touch it and you get that little ripple effect, and mm-hmm. if you press really hard you'll crack it. Mm-hmm. Imagine something where a site took an old crossbow and shot it at the screen, and having the tip of the arrow bend and just bounce off.
So the screen is that strong?
Mm-hmm. Right. They have images of them taking a large hammer and smacking it. And
There's a video.
Yeah, and
it's pretty amazing.
All right, we'll put it on the site. We'll put it on geekspeak.org. So how much does it cost?
I don't know.
Okay. Unbelievable amounts of money.
But at the same time, it does bode well for in the future. It made me think of the One Laptop Per Child project, because that is a laptop that is made for rugged use, been made for extreme environments, for desert as well as jungle, rubberized so you don't lose your grip on it, and trying to make it waterproof, having a lot of sealed edges. It makes me wonder about technology in the future being more for people using it and being less afraid about oh my god, did I jiggle it too much? Or you know, you knock it on a desk a little bit wrong, and the hard drive head bounces. You know, that type of thing.
All right. Well, thank you for the cool future laptops of being indestructible.
Do you have one yet? Didn't you order one?
Yeah, it got delayed. I'll be getting it in early January.
I can't wait to see it. Now, I was just reading here. It doesn't have the hand crank anymore for energy?
Right.
So it's a yo-yo type of thing, right?
Yeah, but that doesn't come with
it. It's still independently powered, though. You don't have to have an adapter for the wall, right?
That's
what if you
right.
don't have power?
So in general, the power sources that sell with it are dependent on the launch of the project, right? So in the U.S. ones, we're going to get like a wall adapter. But in, let's say you're going to, you know, take care of a small country and they've got no electrical infrastructure, but they have a lot of oxen, then they're going to try to make sites that you power your laptop through with some kind of animal power device. Or if they might be, you know, getting the laptop project with these little like yo-yo things you pull. So it really is dependent upon your area.
So you don't, there isn't a low enough energy machine yet that you can do it with just human power.
Well, no. That will work with human power. You just have to get one of those yo-yo things.
Okay.
So it's this little generator that you pull, and it's got a spring in it, and it resets, and it generates electricity that way. And it's not that long to regenerate the entire laptop. It's also extremely low usage, the laptop.
And if anyone wants to learn more, laptop.org.
Or geekspeak.org. We're going to go ahead and take a call from Brant. And let's see. I don't know where Brant is, but we'll just run with it. Hello, Brant. Welcome to Geekspeak.
Well, I'm here with... Amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing.
Okay, I'm looking to buy a new laptop before I can't get Windows XP anymore. So, and I was toying with the idea of maybe buying a Mac and running Windows in parallel with it.
Sure.
But I'm open to a whole lot of ideas. I want to avoid going to Vista as long as possible.
Now, wait a minute. You're just, like, you couldn't have called at a better time, because I have to ask, what about Ubuntu?
You know, I've got an old Sony ME box that I'm probably going to put Ubuntu on, but I write code for the Windows environment, so I'm kind of screwed.
Yep. I think you're going to have to go with Vista eventually if you write code for it, right?
Well, you know, I think you're right, but, you know, there's just too many problems with Vista from my perspective right now, so I want to take my last shot.
Yeah.
And maybe get another couple of years.
Well, you know what you can do, Brant, you can do is just buy a new laptop with Vista on it and just install your older copy of XP on it instead.
Well, I had an interesting conversation with the guys at Fry's, which they're the guys at Fry's, but, you know, one guy said, well, you can't do that because... the drivers won't be compatible, and your stuff may not work.
A lot of the major manufacturers now are allowing the option to have XP preloaded instead of Vista.
Yep.
Okay.
Because so many people are having problems with it that are so reticent to move forward with it.
It's a little more difficult, but you can still, I mean, like, you can get XP on Dell.
Yeah,
laptops.
Dell's got them. HP's got, like, three, I think.
And I think that the guy at Fry's, he's onto something in the sense that some hardware will not have backward compatibility in the future, but at this point, it would be very surprising for a manufacturer to create hardware that doesn't have XP support.
Okay,
that makes sense. Whether they're going to release the drivers for it or not, that is a bit of a concern. But it's not going to be the motherboard, and it's not going to be probably the video card.
Right.
It's going to be other peripherals. I think you're going to be safe.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, I was really, when I was looking at the Macs, I noticed that one of the MacBooks actually runs Vista faster than a PC runs Vista. And so maybe you guys can talk to me a little bit about running dual operating systems on the Macs.
The Macintosh laptops is a pretty good laptop, you know, especially the MacBook Pro.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to be able to get a more powerful Intel Core 2 Duo for cheaper from somebody else besides Apple.
I see.
Did any of the geeks do a dual boot on a Mac?
I've done it before on this laptop. I don't have it now. It's functional. It's a good Windows XP machine. It's not as good as other XP machines I've got because, you know, it's not a gaming system. It doesn't have enough video. And the video card's not that good.
Yeah, I did it on mine. I actually was able to play Titan Quest just fine on it. I wasn't running into any major problems, but then again, there are some new games coming out that I'm sure it couldn't play, and there are laptops that could.
The biggest problem for me at the time was that I wanted to be able to dual boot, but I also wanted to run applications in the OS X environment that were Windows applications. And so at the time, you had to actually have two spaces on your hard drive dedicated to that. And now you can actually do Bootcamp, which is the dual boot source, and then Parallels, which is a virtualization application that allows you to run Windows inside a window on your Macintosh, and it can use the same image. So that's a lot better format. Miles, you had something to add to that?
Yeah, I was just going to talk about it. I've actually done that before.
And does it work
Parallels
well?
Talking to the Bootcamp partition. I actually did something bad to it, so I corrupted it, so I can't really speak to that, so it is possible.
The thing is, for me, Brant, is that you're going to be buying a really expensive Windows machine. Like, it doesn't make sense in that sense. If you want to slowly migrate to a Macintosh, then yeah, it's a great way to do it. Are you feeling like you want to migrate to a Macintosh?
Well, I mean, I've always loved Macintosh, and unfortunately, just because I have to write code for Windows, I've been stuck. I do a lot of graphics, and I do a lot of audio and video work, and the Mac beats the PC hands down for that. So.
Yeah. You know, another thing I'd be concerned about is real-time audio or any kind of real-time work in the Windows environment. Like, if you want to be doing an Airstream through a virtualization on Mac of a Windows, you're going to be concerned because the clock and such is actually emulated. So you might not have the same kind of rotate, but then you can just reboot and just boot into Windows. Well, thank you, Brant, very much for the call. Good luck on your laptop purchase.
All right, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. I think the reason Brant didn't give us the city is because I think he's in the other room calling us, but I'm not sure.
It doesn't matter where you're from, folks. Give us a call.
That's true, except for the lines are busy right now. We're pretty full up, but let's go ahead and go to Atlanta, Georgia. Larry, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hey, guys. Thank you. I'm sorry. Thank you again for taking my call. Okay, my challenge. What I have, guys, is one computer and one monitor. And, guys, time to time I have a need for running two programs simultaneously, and it would be very nice if I could view those programs on my monitor side by side, you know, like have a screen split and run two programs simultaneously. Because I just wonder if there's any kind of freeware program I can use to enable me to run two programs side by side.
If we only had someone who knew something about video cards here.
Oh, video cards? Oh, really?
Well, no, he's not talking about dual monitors. He's just talking about two windows at the same time.
Yeah, right.
Okay,
right.
So it's already part of your operating system. You don't need anything special unless I misunderstand you.
What can you not do?
What applications?
Well, sorry. What I can do is run my programs. I can do that. I can do that very easily. Although what I like to do sometimes is maybe compare two text files side by side.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be nice if I could do, because what happens right now, if I run a program, right, what happens is the program takes over the whole monitor.
Oh, okay. Well, what program are you talking about, Word or something else?
Yeah, Word program or perhaps an accounting program.
It really depends on the application. Most application Windows environment, when you run it, it actually runs its own instance in multiple windows, and you can resize those. If you're in a Windows, right?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, so in the application, like in Word, you should be able to go up to a file menu, which is called Windows, and tile them. You can also right click on your on the bar of the application. So there's a bar that has the close button. If you click next to the buttons that minimize it and such, and you right click on that bar, you can actually tell it to tile your windows. So this is a really basic part of the operating system, which and you can also just click on the rectangle with a thicker bar at the top button that's next to the close button.
Mm-hmm.
If you click on that, it will unmaximize your window, and allow you to drag any of the borders of your window to resize it. So you can grab the right-hand side and move it over and take the other window and move it. You can actually rearrange your windows and do it manually if you'd like.
Cool,
so thank you, and good luck for that, Larry.
Guy, thank you so much.
Thanks for the call from Georgia. Let's go ahead and we've got one more call waiting. Should we take that call right now? I think we should.
You can use third-party apps, too, like WinMerge.
Is that something you need to do, though?
You don't need to. I think Word has a capability. I just remember what it's called. But I know a lot of people save their files as text documents and use third-party app like WinMerge to compare them.
All right. From SoCal, Helen, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah, hi. My question follows the one before the last one about Vista. I just bought a new laptop, and all of them have Vista now, and so it didn't seem like I had any other options. But I was looking at other options because I remember hearing something on your show about problems with Vista, and I just wanted to understand what the problems are and what to do, and just, it's too late now because I already got the laptop.
All right, so all those people that got Vista recently.
Well, wait, are you having a problem right now?
I haven't gotten the computer yet. Okay. I just ordered it, and it should be coming soon. But
preventative just, worries.
Well, I'm concerned.
If you're starting from scratch, I don't know that there's anything particularly wrong. It does it's slower than XP.
Okay.
But on a brand new computer, you might not notice that because it'll be faster than your older Windows.
And some people think it looks better or like the way it looks.
Right. So a change from XP, people who are going from XP to Vista may not see an advantage. When you're starting from scratch, it's not so bad. And also, some good news for you is that Vista's Service Pack 1 is coming out soon, so it may address a lot of the issues that people have with Vista.
I would try to forget what we've said about Vista and just enjoy the experience as much as possible. And when you run into problems, go, oh, that's what they were talking about. Most likely you're not going to. The geeks here, we had fast hardware, we're running Windows XP. We switched to Vista, we noticed it's slower. But if we just gotten that computer compared to an older piece of hardware, Vista wouldn't be seeming slow at all because the hardware would have compensated for the slowdown. And the big problem is
compatibility too. If you're running Windows XP on a machine already and you want to upgrade to Vista, there's a lot of times where things will not work because Vista doesn't have the right drivers to support the hardware. Well, but if you're buying a machine that already comes with Vista, then it's guaranteed that everything's going to work.
The laptop that comes with Vista doesn't have any software in it, really. I would need to download it from other computer.
You're most likely not going to run into a lot of software issues.
Okay.
We're talking about, like, if you've got a scanner. Are there going to be drivers for that scanner in Vista? That kind of thing. Printers.
And, well, let's go with that for a moment. This is a laptop. And so are you saying that there's problems if I want to have it use a printer or a scanner?
It's more like if you've got a printer that you've been salvaging for 5 years, manufacturer stopped making it 2 years ago. There's no reason for them to have ever released any software that will allow it to run in Vista because they're no longer supporting it. So it really has to do with...
Oh, I see. So it's only for machines that aren't...
Machines, hardware, things of that nature, right? If the company went out of business. But if the company...
Otherwise, all the printers and everything would have software updates, so I could
use... That's right.
And do I pay for that, or is that
It's normally something you download. And actually, Vista, lots of times, will have those things already built into the OS when you install it. It'll actually have the drivers for common printers and stuff. We're really talking about kind of obscure things that you might have that you're trying to hold on to. The migration to Vista is going to be very painful for you. But if you've got a printer that's 4 years old and it's HP printer, you're not going to run into a problem because it's such a big company and stuff. All right?
That's interesting. Now, could you tell me a little bit about that YouTube thing that you're talking about? It went over my head. I'll take this call off the air, but explain what that is.
Ubuntu. Oh, yes. We will.
Ubuntu.
Thank you for the call.
The spelling is U-B-U-N-T-U. It's an African word. So if you go to ubuntu.com, you can learn all about it.
You know, if you're going to get a Vista machine, I recommend getting as much memory as possible.
As much memory as possible?
Yeah, I mean, up to 2 gigs.
What about 4 gigs?
I think 1 gig is too low. 2 gig is probably optimal.
All right.
Anything above that, you should run a 64-bit version
because you won't use
of Vista, or you won't be taking advantage of the memory, and it'll be a waste of money.
Remember when gigabyte hard drives were huge?
Yes.
And to compare two documents in Word, what I recommend is open up Word, go to Help, and type in compare two copies of a document, and it will give you complete instructions on how to do that.
Nice. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
So use Word Help. I mean, and you could type in sentences, and typically, it's really good. It'll come up and tell you what needs to be done.
Thank you. From Pacific Grove, Gene, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you, guys. Quick question about you talked about last week, the USB turntable.
Yes.
The ION.
And I'm thinking about get one. I guess they've got them at Radio Shack, something called a Gem Sound DJ USB with USB interface. The question I have is, you know, everybody talks MP3, and you can put it in the computer and load it to MP3. I don't want to do MP3. Will this thing, if I do my LP and I plug this, you know, I play it on that and it goes in the computer, can I then create a CD of that LP?
Almost definitely. I'm not familiar with this hardware package or what software you have in your computer, but yeah.
Yeah, the USB
just makes it act as an audio device. So you're just piping in audio in. How you save it, whether it be an MP3, a WAV file, or a FLAC file, is immaterial.
Well, it actually comes, according to this website, it comes with some software called Audacity.
This one has that, yeah.
It'll rip it directly to MP3.
But the Radio Shack one, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
But
it has Audacity.
The ION turntable allows you to record to CD or MP3 formats. And you can also just play records on your computer.
Now, Gene, I got a quick question for you. Do you currently have any way of burning CDs? Have you done this experience? Okay. How do you do that right now?
Dell Audio. It's a Dell machine, and it says create CD, and
okay.
I get...
And where do you get these audio files? From MP3s?
Not out of me.
Okay, so what's going to happen is...
I put a CD in, and then it... puts it in the computer,
right.
I guess.
Okay. So what you're going to do is you're going to take this audio that's coming in, use the software that comes with the USB turntable. Mm-hmm. You're going to record those to MP3 or Wave. It doesn't really matter. And then after you do that, you're going to go into the application you're used to normally burning audio CDs with, have it rescan the folders that you saved it in, and it will show up now with songs. And you just use those songs to create your new CD.
Hopefully
so it's
fine.
Very
okay.
Yeah, it's very
great.
Similar.
Thank you a lot.
You bet. Thanks, Gene, for the call.
Yeah, you don't need a preamp or an amplifier. It's just a USB connection to your computer. If you go to Amazon.com, the feedback says that for Mac users, the software is not so great. Mm. For PC users, it seems to be great. And there's ways to remove the scratches and popping, although it's not perfect. You know, but then again, it's a record.
And the software is free.
All right.
Yeah, but it's not great software, but it certainly does the job, at least on a PC.
All right. And, of course, that one is specifically the Ion one, and he was mentioning another one that's available at Radio Shack. So
Gemstone,
who knows what the software.
Yeah, Gemstone. He said. Yeah. Yeah, we're talking about the Ion turntable. Just go to Amazon and look for Ion turntable. You'll see it there.
Grab the one at Radio Shack and see how it works. You can return it since it's local. It's not that hard. Let's go ahead and cover some more technologies of up-and-coming technology. Sean, you shot out a giant list. What's Microsoft Surface?
Wow, Rick bought one of the Ion turntables. We'll have to ask him about that.
Oh,
yeah.
Should invite him in.
Microsoft, there's a bunch of technologies that come out this year that we can certainly talk about. I think, for me, I'm more interested in mobile internet. I think iPhone started it, but I want to see more connectivity, more functionality out of my cell phone. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping to see some cool things happen in 2008.
What do you currently use for web browsing on your cell phone or portable device? What do you
My BlackBerry browser, but I downloaded the Opera Mini browser. You can surf very much like the iPhone where you see the whole page and then you zoom in to sections.
Yeah.
And it works very well. So if you've got a mini, especially a BlackBerry, but if you've got a mobile device and you want a better browser, you might want to check out the Opera Mini browser. It's in beta form right now, but it's very stable and it works great.
What do you use it for, Sean? Because I've got a Trio and I found that browsing is so painful, I never do it.
Yeah, I don't do it on my Trio either.
Okay.
Mobile internet is cool. Microsoft Surface is, think about it, you're sitting in front of a map, right? And you want to zoom in. Instead of just using one finger or a mouse, you put two fingers down and you spread them apart. So the iPhone has this capability already where you can use, you know,
different
two
tactile
fingers to zoom in on something. So it's a different way of moving things around. They want you to use your whole hand, multiple fingers to do things. You shouldn't need a keyboard. Kind of interesting technology. I think it's in its infancy right now, but I think for especially drafting and engineering and especially on a big screen on a wall, when you walk up to a wall, where's the keyboard? Where do you use the mouse? You know, but it'd be really cool if you could just touch the wall and do what you need to do.
So that kind of technology, you see it coming in 2008 quite a bit?
Yeah, well, it already came in 2007, but I think 2008 is
brighter,
really going to take off.
Broader adoption.
Yeah.
I agree. And that's multi-touch is one of the ways you generify that kind of content, how you talk about it is multi-touch.
Yeah.
So, Sean, what's the difference between Opera Mini and Opera Mobile? Did you look at that? Which one are you talking about?
I think it's Opera Mini. I think there's a couple different versions. Maybe it's just Opera Mobile. But I remember I tried to install Opera Mobile on my BlackBerry, and it said I need a Mini.
There's Symbian. It only runs on Symbian and Windows Mobile, so that might be why. Anyway, go to opera.com if you want to learn more, huh?
Yeah, Opera Mini. So go to opera.com, and you'll see there's Opera Mini, Opera Mobile. And the Mini, I think, is for the BlackBerry.
Hmm. Speaking of multi-touch, apparently the next release of Windows that will come out, I guess they're calling it Windows 7 right now, one of its touted features will be multi-touch technology as well. So I imagine the Microsoft multi-touch tabletop, what was it called?
Surface.
I imagine technology. They're going to be implementing much more of that technology into the next Windows release.
But the next Windows release would be kind of the time frame that took Vista, so 7 years?
I think they've learned their lesson. They're probably going to reduce their time frame a little bit.
All right, now I'll predict that Macintosh will have a multi-touch interface to their OS prior to Windows.
I probably.
You support that?
All right.
All right.
Is anyone going to go on a limb here?
Is that not going on a limb?
Saying that none of us have taken very big risks in our predictions.
All right, predictions. Okay, predictions.
I think DRM free is really kind of a cool technology. Not really technology, but direction for the industry to go. And Amazon.com now, you can download DRM free music, not have to worry about it, not working on devices. Didi was just iming me and telling me that she did it recently, and it's worked really well for her.
Did what?
Downloaded music from Amazon that was DRM free, uh-huh. No digital rights management built into it. So you own the music, you can play it wherever you want.
Meaning it's just a standard MP3.
It's just a standard MP3. You can do whatever you want with it.
It's regular music. It's from artists that are known and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, new hits.
And she says iTunes
new songs are 89 cents.
And iTunes supports as well at a higher rate as a 25 cent surcharge.
Of course, yeah, because that's Apple and they're awesome, right?
I have a really unrisky prediction. Laura will continue to love Apple all next year.
No. Oh, man.
In fact, Apple geeks will continue to outnumber PC geeks all next year.
Oh, on GeekSpeak?
On GeekSpeak.
Oh, that's for sure. I agree with that.
We had Sean Peltier last week, and it was a Windows-heavy group. It was kind of exciting. I like.
You mean
it
was balanced for once?
No, actually, Miles, were you here last week?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, it was balanced.
I don't think it'll ever go over 50%. Ever.
Yeah, but Peltier had an iPhone.
Oh, he's converting slowly. Yeah. All right, so...
Yeah, but iPhone works on a PC, too. A Macintosh is like a... It's like an appliance, right? You buy it and you use it, and then when it goes bad or you want to upgrade to something...
Unlike the PC, you can use it.
I use my PCs just fine. But I just want upgradability in my desktops. I would move to Apple OS.
All right, so, Rick...
I want to be able to install it myself.
I'm sorry. Drew, you said that you installed Ubuntu on a laptop, gave it to a neighbor that never had a computer before. Is that neighbor happy with their computer experience?
It's too soon to tell. Uh-huh. He's still getting DSL, so he hasn't had a browser experience with it yet. But, you know, obviously the browser makes no difference. It's Firefox either way.
Do you have in your life a Windows user or that you're going to be upgrading to Ubuntu? Like, are you trying to convert anybody?
I would love it if my wife would do it, but she has a bunch of software applications that she's dependent upon, like Dreamweaver for Windows, and so she continues. And she's comfortable with Windows. She may not love it, but she's
comfortable.
You know, yeah.
That's the one thing for Ubuntu for me would be Photoshop and Lightroom. I can't really deal without those operating systems.
They have similar equivalent products. Yeah. I don't know if they're as good, and I don't know, depending on whether or not you're a power user, how much they can substitute. But having the fact that you can use the live CD and then see all this stuff for free without making any changes makes it more compelling to try it out.
All right. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. The geeks this morning were Ryder Brooks. I always want to say Ryder's Brooks. Sorry about that. Ryder Brooks, Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, Drew Meyer, and answering the phones as he does every week is Rick Filmon. Thank you so much for your participation in GeekSpeak today.
Glad to be here.
Thank you, Miles. I felt all alone there for a moment. GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Thank you for listening to GeekSpeak, and to those that called in, thanks for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it'd just be us geeking out, and who wants to listen to that? GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. Broadcasting HD radio on 88.9 FM. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Otto. We're on the web at kosp.org. For KOSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. See you next week. You just listened to another episode of GeekSpeak via our podcast. Would you do us a favor? Please go to your favorite podcasting index site, whether it be iTunes, Dig.com, Odeo, or another site, and write a review or give us a vote to let others know what you think about GeekSpeak. Thanks, that'd really help us out. GeekSpeak is supported by PreownedCar.com, PreownedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. This is Lyle Troxell for KUSP. Thanks for listening.